you would turn to Galatians chapter 6 and verse number 1. Pastor has been in a series on relationships in the church, and this was a verse that he has touched on a couple of times. Galatians 6, verse 1, "Brethren, if a man be overtaken in a fault, ye which are spiritual, restore such a one in a spirit of meekness, considering thyself, lest thou also be tempted." Pastor brought out that, first of all, it's if a man be overtaken in a fault, not if a man have a fault, because we all have faults. And there's a difference between having a fault and being overtaken in it. Having a fault to the degree that it has overtaken your life and it is dragging you down to the depths and destroying you is a whole different category. And that speaks of a time for some intervention. Speaks of a time when a Christian brother would go to another Christian brother and talk about the situation that's going on in their life for the sake of restoration. That's the goal. It's always the goal. Sometimes maybe somebody annoys us and we just want them taken care of, but the goal is always restoration. The part of the verse that is extremely heavy is that second phrase, "ye which are spiritual." Ye which are spiritual. We're going to basically divide the message in half. The first half will focus on that phrase, "ye which are spiritual." When we consider that thought, he didn't say, "ye which follow a certain amount of rules," or "ye which keep the Ten Commandments," but "ye which are spiritual." Because you can keep commandments and not be spiritual. That's what the Pharisees do. They keep commandments, but they're not spiritual. And you can never embark on the restoration process if you're not spiritual. A Pharisee will not be successful in restoring someone. And so he says, "ye which are spiritual." That's an extremely weighty, weighty phrase to ponder. It's one that after the message, when Pastor read, this wasn't his text, it was just a side note, but that phrase kept ringing in my mind for days, "ye which are spiritual." Oh, the power that spiritual people have when you're spiritual. Are you spiritual? The phrase there pierced me like a knife. It really just pierced into me, that thought. Prior to being a preacher, prior to pastoring, I measured spirituality by a certain number of do's and don'ts, which you can get away with to some degree in your mind. But when I began to try to get messages from the Lord and begin to hear from the Lord, begun to realize that spirituality is far deeper and far more complicated. And it's a whole different set of measurements of being spiritual. In 1 Corinthians chapter 3, Paul tells the church at Corinth that they're not spiritual, basically. In 1 Corinthians 3, verse 1, "And I, brethren, could not speak unto you as unto spiritual, but as unto carnal," which is the opposite of spiritual. The opposite of spiritual is fleshly. Pastor said something else in his message that also pierced me, and this was a different message, but he was talking about bitterness, and he says you can't be bitter and be spiritual at the same time. And as he was saying that, my mind began to flood with multitudes of sins that you can't have and be spiritual at the same time. There are thoughts that you can't think and feelings that you can't harbor down within yourself and have any amount of spirituality. It's you may not realize it. You may be able to feign yourself as spiritual, but I find it every time that I get asked to fill in or preach a message, you know, and I'm harboring something in myself, I can't get a message. I can't have the communion with the Lord that I need to have. And so in some ways, preaching gives you an advantage because you begin to understand very quickly ways I'm not spiritual, moments and groups and lots of time that pass by that are not spiritual groups of time in my life. Have a disagreement or a quarrel with my wife, and then I'm mulling that over and mulling that over. And yet, I only have a few hours to really sit down and try to get a message. It doesn't work at all. And so you begin to try to comprehend what is being spiritual and what is being carnal. He mentions in verse number 3, he proved that they were carnal. The whole reason why he was writing the letter to the church of Corinth is they were struggling as a body of Christ. They had divisions, they had difficulties. And so he says, "For ye are yet carnal," verse 3, "whereas there is among you envying, strife, and divisions. Are ye not carnal and walk as men?" He proved that they were carnal because they had divisions. You can't have divisions if you're not carnal. They don't go hand in hand. And the proofs that he laid out there were spiritual measurements. They weren't, you do this and you don't do that. They were spiritual measurements. Envying, strife, divisions, those are spiritual things. And so the measurement of whether you were carnal or spiritual was a spiritual measurement. Perhaps they had dotted all their theological I's and crossed all their theological T's, but on a spiritual measurement, they were not spiritual. They were carnal. They had strife, they had envy, and you could list a number of things that you cannot have in your heart and be spiritual at the same time. When we speak of being spiritual, we're speaking of walking in the Spirit and having close communion with God versus carnal, which is walking in the flesh. You can do Christian and godly things in the flesh. There's multitude of examples of that. Mary and Martha are an example of that. Martha was doing more than Mary, technically, but she was in the flesh. The parable of the widow with two mites was, the widow was technically by physical measurements, doing less than everybody in her tithing. And yet, the Lord said she had done more than all of them together. So by measurement's sake, she had technically done less. And then we see the examples of the publican praying, who wouldn't lift up his eyes to heaven. In the parable of the cleaning of dishes, and the cleaning of the vessels, and the cleaning of the outside and the inside, and the parable of the whited sepulchres, all through the New Testament, all the way through the New Testament, pulling us to what true spirituality is. Both the messages of Christ, the messages of Paul, over and over again, these things pulling us toward the spiritual and away from carnal. Turn with me, if you will, to 1 Samuel chapter number 13. A little story in the Old Testament that as I was meditating on this verse, the Lord brought this to my mind, to my memory. And it's very easy in the days that we live in to be very fleshly, to be very carnal. Again, I bringing to you another passage that cuts very deeply into me. Not passages that I feel like would fit everybody else really well, but passages that the Lord has just brought to me. In 1 Samuel 13, Saul is leading the people against the Philistines, and a great multitude of the Philistines had come up against them in battle, and they were in bad shape. And what's really sad is what we read in verse 19, 1 Samuel 13, verse 19. "Now there was no smith found throughout all the land of Israel. For the Philistines said, 'Lest the Hebrews make them swords or spears.' As I thought about this passage, I thought about the lack of spiritual people in the day that we live in. Certainly, we live in days in which a lot of people need spiritual restoration. Certainly, we live in times that we know tons of people overtaken by faults and need someone to go to them and to restore them and to help them. And as I thought about the times that we live in, the Lord brought this to my mind, this time in Israel when there was no blacksmiths. Similar to that, to the idea that there aren't any people that are cultivated and skilled enough to restore people spiritually. At this time, there was no one that was able to restore their swords and their plows and their implements. There was a day that nobody was a blacksmith in Israel. How this came about was the Philistines had schemed and said, lest the Hebrews make them swords or spears. Now, I'm sure they didn't say that to the Israelites. I'm sure what they did is they just made their blacksmithing so cheap that Israel got out of the blacksmithing business. They outsourced it all to the Philistines. They said, we can't make plows as cheap as the Philistines make plows, you know? So they just quit doing it. And I don't know where all their swords and spears went. Maybe they were buying up swords and spears for a good price in the Philistine land and they sold them. Verse 20, but all Israel went down to the Philistines to sharpen every man his share, his coulter, his axe, and his mattock. All their plows and rakes and hoes and things, they had those made by the Philistines. There was nobody left that had that skill in the land of the Philistines, or in the land of Israel. And that's kind of like today. There's not many left. I mean, think about it in your mind. Try to number people that you would say are really, really spiritual. I don't count myself in that number. People that you really think just are very good at walking close to the Lord, have very close communion with Him, whose prayers are heard. Think about those people. This was a time in Israel when they had lost a skill. And we're very much, I believe, in a day when we've lost a skill. Notice verse 21, yet they had a file for mattocks and coulters and forks and axes to sharpen the goads. All that Israel knew how to do was sharpen their own plows a little bit. Couldn't make new plows, they couldn't make swords, they couldn't make knives. But you know, they made sure that they could still work. They made sure that they could still do the physical things they needed to do. They made sure that they could still make money. They made sure that they could still plow their fields, that they could still eat, that they could still do all the fleshly things that they wanted to do. And as I thought about that, I thought, what a parable of the day and age that we live in. If we were to list all the things that we might consider ourselves to be experts at, things that we feel like we do better than other people, things like that we feel like we're the best around at, would it be spiritual things? Do we feel like we have the corner on spiritual things? Like, do we feel like we've got the corner on fervent prayer? Do we feel like we've got the corner on witnessing? We're very good at telling the gospel. I don't know many. As I look around, many that I consider to be spiritual are passing on. And the sad thing was, Israel made sure that they had a file for their hoes and for their plows, and they made sure that's where they had put their focus. That's the definition of carnal. The definition of carnal is leaving the spiritual behind and having your focus on, you know, whatever it is. I feel like that I've been around the optical world long enough. I've worked every last part of it that I feel like I know about it. about how the business of it works and feel like I know that. What do you feel like you know? That'll tell you whether you're spiritual or carnal. What do you feel like you're expert in? What do you feel like you have the corner on? What do you feel like you have the market in? Is it spiritual things? Matthew 6:33, we all know the verse, "Seek ye first the kingdom of God and his righteousness, and all these things shall be added unto you." I'm tempted to put all of my focus, all of my brain power into marketing and you know, I worry about that more than anything. I took on a new job recently, and as I'm going through the interview process, they're trying to figure out if I have the drive to do this job, and all the while I'm thinking, I'm trying to figure out if I've got the control to still maintain a Christian life. That's what I'm trying to figure out. Can I do this job and not lose control of myself? Because I can get in somewhere and turn it into 70, 80 hours a week very easily. The question is, do I have the restraint to work this job? So, seek ye first basically is a promise from God that if you pour yourself into the kingdom and make yourself an expert into the kingdom, he said, I'll just add all the rest of that stuff to you. All these things shall be added to you. Makes it sound like those are the easy part. But we major on that sometimes. We major on those things and focus on physical things and miss the kingdom part. In Colossians 1:9, we don't necessarily have to turn there, but Colossians 1:9 and Ephesians chapter 3 and Ephesians chapter 2 are three prayers of the Apostle Paul. And in those three prayers, one thing that we see is that spirituality is not automatic with salvation. Sometimes we think that's the case, but just read the one verse from Colossians in chapter 1 and verse 9, and he prays very similar prayers for the church of Ephesus. "For this cause we also, since the day we heard of it, do not cease to pray for you and to desire that ye may be filled with the knowledge of his will in all wisdom and spiritual understanding, that ye might walk worthy of the Lord unto all pleasing, being faithful in every good work, and increasing in the knowledge of God, strengthened with all might according to his glorious power, unto all patience and long-suffering with joyfulness, giving thanks unto the Father, which hath made us meet partakers of the inheritance of the saints in light." He prayed that all of that would be bestowed upon them on top of their salvation. Spirituality is not automatic. In Galatians chapter 6 and verse 1, our text verse didn't say, "Ye which are saved, restore such a one." Because not all the saved are in a place of restoration. And what a sad thing. I have lamented so many times in my life as I look around at people. We look at people that have problems. We look at people that have needs. And this is another test. This is another test of whether you're spiritual or you're carnal. And you look at all of these people and you go, "I don't know what to do." That's me. I don't know what to do. Why? Because I'm carnal. Getting back to our text, and we'll get to the second part of our message this evening. In Galatians chapter 6, verse 1, "Brethren, if a man be overtaken in a fault, ye which are spiritual, restore such a one." This is an amazing verse. It really is. Paul said to the Galatians, "You which are spiritual, go fix that person." That's amazing to me. That we, those who are spiritual, have been charged with the business of healing broken believers. That's amazing to me. That fact alone ought to tell us how rare spiritual people are, because broken people are everywhere. Broken lives are everywhere. And Paul told the Galatian church to go fix them. Ye which are spiritual, go heal them. Go fix them. Go give them what they need. You say, I don't know what they need. Are you spiritual? You may not know what to say. That doesn't mean you're not spiritual. In fact, admitting that you have no idea what to do is probably the first spiritual step you can take. In humility, saying, Lord, I don't know what to do, but I want to do something. Ye which are spiritual, that word restore means fixed to the fullest. I mean, it doesn't mean go say something to them and maybe it'll... He says, go fix them. Go repair them to the fullest. Make them whole. That's amazing to me. What power God gives the believer when he walks with him in a spiritual life. I would like to say that that's every day in my life, but it's not. I know there's been times, you know, when we look at that, it says, ye which are spiritual. That doesn't mean that there are spiritual people and there aren't spiritual people. I believe that there are saved people, that they have periods of spirituality. May have periods which are they're not spiritual. And you know where you're at. You know how you're living. You know how your life is. You know how your prayer life is, how your devotion life is, how you're feeling, how you're walking with God. You know all that. I don't know that. I can't tell all of that from the outside. I can see signs and things, but I don't know. We can't tell that. You know that. And I'm sure that you can look back and you know that there have been times that you were communing close with the Lord and he brought you near someone. And you may have said some things and their lives turned around. I know I've been there. I can say by the grace of God there have been times. I wish it was every day, but it's not. But there have been times that the Lord brought me into somebody's life and their life was falling apart and he gave me words to say and that person and I wept and their life changed. And that's amazing. I wish it was every day. Because every day there's people around us that are broken. Every day there's people that need spiritual healing all around us. James chapter 5. Pastor read this also. Verse 16. Confess your faults one to another and pray for one another that ye may be healed. And Pastor brought out that you can have physical disease as a result from spiritual disease. But I believe, and I think Pastor does too, that the primary emphasis of that healing there is spiritual. Confess your faults one to another and pray for one another that ye may be healed. Sin is a disease. It clings to you. It brings you into bondage. It holds on to you. It ruins your life. You can't get out of it. Pray for one another that ye may be healed. You know, the disciples in Luke chapter 9, we won't turn there, they were sent out to heal physically. But that's not our commission. Ours is a spiritual one. And that's amazing to me that we read in Galatians chapter 6 that Paul said, go fix them. There's people around you broken. Go fix them. Go repair them. Fix their life. That's amazing to me to think that. Verse 17, Elias was a man subject to like passions as we are. He struggled like we are. He had carnal days. In fact, you read the story of Elijah, you read some of his carnal moments. Moments when, you know, he had times that he was up on a mountain and then he had times that he just wanted to die. Subject to like passions as we are, and he prayed earnestly that it might not rain. And it rained not on the earth by the space of 3 years and 6 months. And he prayed again, and the heaven gave rain, and the earth brought forth her fruit. Why does he tell us that? Because he's convincing us of the power in verse 19. He's laying that out as an example of what we can do spiritually. Notice verse 19. Brethren, if any of you do err from the truth, and one convert him. That's amazing. Someone straying from the truth. Well, I guess there they go. No. Fix them. And one convert him, let him know that he which converteth the sinner from the error of his way shall save a soul from death and hide a multitude of sins. That's amazing power to me. That God grants that power to people. But not just anybody, those that are walking close to him. As he said there, ye which are spiritual. Back in verse 16, it said, the effectual fervent prayer of a righteous man availeth much. While we're right here, 1 Peter chapter 4. In verse 8, similar language as in the previous verses, says, and above all, have fervent charity among yourselves. In other words, active, burning charity. Active, burning love among yourselves. And then he says the same thing that we read in James, for charity shall cover the multitude of sins. This is charity or love in action. The work of restoration. The work of edifying one another. Verse 9, use hospitality one to another without grudging. As every man hath received the gift, even so minister the same one to another. Ministering to one another. Yeah. Fixing one another. Helping one another. This is the purpose of the body. As good stewards, notice that last phrase, as good stewards of the manifold grace of God. In other words, the manifold grace of God has come to you and you have to do something with it. You have to be a steward of it. You have to show it towards your brethren, show it towards people around you. Lastly, just looking at our text again in closing. In Galatians 6 there, brethren, if a man be overtaken in a fault, again, that's not if a man have faults, but if he be overtaken, if he's being drawn down, sucked in, and destroyed, that's what sin does. Draws you in, brings you down, and destroys you. It has that binding, overtaking power. I think that's something that often gets overlooked by people. People think, well, I'll sin and I'll just get it right. No, it has binding, overtaking, destroying power. You could be right on the edge of complete destruction in your life, never to come back. If a brother's in that condition, ye which are spiritual, and what a phrase to ponder. How sad so many times that we've not been, because certainly there are brethren overtaken in a fault. Yet there lack spiritual people. Ye which are spiritual, restore such a one in the spirit of meekness. That's key. In the spirit of meekness, considering thyself, lest thou also be tempted. That's the danger. We're also sinful people engaged in the restoration process of others. We have to consider ourselves. Walk carefully. Walk prayerfully. But what an amazing thought. The power that God gives to the spiritual person. Someone who is walking in the presence of God. Doesn't that just give you a whole nother reason to try to walk close to the Lord? Because there's so many people around us that need it so badly. The Apostle Paul tells wives to stay with their lost husbands. Why? Because they might be changed by the testimony of that wife. That's amazing. There are many such ways. There are so many people around us that need restoration, whether it be spouses or children. There's so many reasons for us to walk close to the Lord, that we might be usable, that God might be able to use us in their lives to restore them. What an amazing thought. What an amazing power. How it ought to encourage us to stay true to our devotions and our study time, as pastor's talking about in Sunday school, and stay true to our prayer life, and try to not just follow rules. Because I've found that there's times that it seems as though I followed all the rules, but I wasn't spiritual and I couldn't get a message from the Lord. There's other times that I may have stumbled and I may have fell, but I spent the week on my knees. And the Lord was speaking to me the whole time and filling me and working on me, and I had communion with Him. So He said, "Ye which are spiritual," what a thought. And what a motivation to follow that thought. The fact that we could restore those around us. Certainly, there are so many people that need guidance, need help. And maybe you're that one. Maybe that's why you work where you work, or live where you live, or why your car broke down that day and you had to go to that shop, or whatever it may be. That you would be that person that God would use in somebody else's life. Just some thoughts that the Lord impressed upon me over the last week as I was chewing on a verse that I really didn't feel like it at face value applied to me that much. And the Lord seemed to say, "So you think you're spiritual, do you?" We tend to think we are because we start looking at different things we do and don't do, measure ourselves that way. But many times we're not. Do you find yourself looking around hopeless? How do I help these people? Work on your condition. That's step one. You want to help people around you? Work on your condition. It's like the instructions when you get on an airplane. You put your oxygen mask on first. Why? Because if you're passed out, you're not going to help anybody. That's the way it is. It's not to be selfish, but work on your condition first, and then you can help people around you. We'll stop there. We'll have Brother Larry come and lead us.